Hello, I'm Richard Fish, and this is Making It in Movie Making. And this week I'm talking to Jono Smith about his YouTube career. So, can you just tell me a bit about what you do? Because you've got quite a big following. So, just explain what it's all about.
So basically, I'm a full-time tattooist, YouTuber, and social influencer. My YouTube channel's based around my day job, if you like, tattooing. And it just focuses on tutorials, reviews, and everything concerned about tattooing, basically.
So where did you first get the idea to go from just working as a tattoo artist to like going online?
So it's really weird how I fell into tattooing. I used to be a taxi driver, and through sheer boredom at work, it just wasn't meant for me. And I started drawing to pass time by because, some people could sit in the cars for hours and hours and then doing nothing. And I just can't do that. So I just started drawing. I started drawing like portraits of my kids and things like that. And I got quite good at it over the years that I did it. And it's not because I'm gifted or anything like that. It's purely because I think if you practice something over and over again, you naturally become good at it. And then I put a few pictures on Facebook, and then we've got people saying like, "How much do you charge?" And I'm like, "Well, I'll do it for free. It's just something I do in my spare time." And then it just sort of naturally progressed from there. It was never a conscious thing where I said one day I'm going to be a tattooist, but it was a passion which fortunately I could turn into something which I do for a living now. And then obviously YouTube was born from that. And I think the YouTube thing come from the tattoo industry as a whole is a very it's a weird business to get into. It's very cloak and dagger. You can't really find tutorials on it anywhere. The tutorials, well, that I found on it weren't really tutorials. They were more like people saying, "Hey, look at me, look how good I am." And didn't really teach you anything, so I wanted to do something different and make a YouTube channel, just answering questions that I would have wanted answering when I was first starting. I was lucky to get an apprenticeship, but for the people that can't get that, and I do get a lot of flack for that through people that are tattooists, and they'll say like, "Why are you teaching people?" Rah rah rah, and all the rest of it. But yeah, that's where YouTube came from.
So it seems like there's loads of steps I want to ask you about there. So firstly, while you were working as a taxi driver, were you just like drawing in times when you were available as a taxi person or like
Literally that, yeah, between jobs. So I could do a job that took me maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, and then you'd go to the back of queue. And some days you'd be waiting 2 hours for your next job. So you're working for 15 minutes or something like that, and then you're back at queue again. And it was just mind-numbing. And I spent a lot of time just sat in my car. So I just started drawing, and I, just took a notepad to work with me. And just started
in the
drawing from
car.
there in the car. One of my first drawings was a portrait of Kurt Cobain that I drew it on my steering wheel. I look at it I look at it now and I think, "Oh God, that's crap," but at the time I was really really pleased with it. And the only alternative to not sitting in your car was going in the office. And I mean, it was just, I don't know, it just wasn't for me. It was just filled with people just telling stories, and when someone's lying, and you're just like, "Oh God, this again." And it was just the whole thing was mind-numbing. I mean, it's no disrespect to taxi drivers, that's it just wasn't for me.
Yeah, and you'd rather be like doing something else with your time rather than listening to
Absolutely, yeah. I
gossip
didn't
or
want to
whatever.
spend the rest of my life doing that. No, not a chance.
So I mean, this is it's like not making it in taxi driving, but it's interesting. Like, so like, do you get paid for the time you're sitting around, or do you only get paid when you're driving the car? Like, how
No,
it
it
works?
was literally just per job.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So it's so yeah. So invest in your time, learn something, and get out of there
I
as quick
think
as you
so,
can.
yeah. You get that question, well, people say a lot, now I've become a tattooist and they say, "Oh, I couldn't do this." People always refer to, "I can't draw a stick man." And I always think, you know, I, despite what some people will tell you, tattooists, the, you know, you, some people say, oh, I was born with a pencil in my hand. And I don't know, it's, there's no magical gift or talent involved at all. I think it's just, it's like anything, not just tattooing. If you're good at something, it's probably because you've invested a lot of time into getting good at that thing.
Yeah, that's true. So were you not good at art in school then? Do you just develop it all from sitting in the car drawing?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I did art in school, but it bored me because it was stuff like draw a bowl of fruit, which is, I think that's the staple of what a lot of schools, well, when I was at school, anyway, I don't know what it's like now. And
you know how to tattoo many bowls of fruit then?
Literally, yeah. It was just like shade this banana or orange or whatever. And yeah, just, I don't know. I think if it doesn't hold your interest, you're just gonna do the minimum, aren't you, just to get through that lesson or whatever. Yeah. And I think a lot of art schools like that as well, which is probably why a lot of people don't really buy into that sort of thing. Whereas if you're doing something where, you know, you want to start and do something really good, like I want to learn to draw portraits. Fair enough. They might turn out hideous when you first start, but as long as you're enjoying doing those at the beginning, and I think that's key into learning anything. If you're enjoying it and you're passionate about it, and not just doing it because you're going through the motions to do it.
Okay, so where did you decide? So obviously you're doing these pictures and everyone's liking them, but like, why did that immediately translate into tattoos? Like, what made you think that?
I think it was just a natural progression. It was, you know, drawing stuff on paper and watch it, like getting good at it, I suppose, and then watching it come alive, and then just sort of seeing that sort of artwork replicated on people's skin. And it maybe it was a bit of a challenge to start with or something like that, and thinking, I wonder if I could do that. And the transition to tattooing is quite a big transition, but there's a lot of things that I still take from drawing, which I apply to tattooing. So, you know, it's not as simple as a case of, well, I can draw on paper, so I can draw on skin. But there is a lot of factors that you can apply with regards to shade and, you know, how light works and things like that.
So did you first tattoo people when you were doing this apprenticeship, or had you like got your mates to be guinea pigs first?
The very first person I tattooed was myself. It was on my leg, my own leg. And the thing behind that was, if I mess it up, I've not messed anyone else up. It's on me, you know, and I can live with that. The guy that apprenticed me, he was old school, to be fair to him. You know, he was like, you know, just get as many people as you can, we'll get them in and get them tattooed. And it's not really what I wanted to do. I'm a kind of a perfectionist with things like this. And if in my mind it wasn't going to be perfect, which I'm under no illusion now that it was, but in my mindset, if it wasn't going to be perfect, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to fail on someone's skin and then, you know, right, move on to the next. I wanted to perfect it every single time. So I thought, if I do it on my own skin, then if it does mess up, then, like I say, it's on me.
So how long had you been doing tattoos or working as a tattoo artist before you started trying to move this stuff online?
A good few years, maybe 2 or 3 years, something like that. And to start with, when that's actual tattoos, I should say, I started reviewing things quite early on when I first got into tattooing. And it was more of a thing of I bought this machine, I want to show people, you know, so I'd make a quick video and say, you know, I bought this, it costs this much, this is what I think of it. And I used to do that with a lot of products that I've acquired through tattooing. And before you know it, you've built up like a repertoire of videos. And you've got 10 or 20 videos behind you just saying, you know, I bought this. What do you think? Like, has anyone tried this? Has anyone got anything different?
So with this was like how that went down. The whole time you were working as a tattoo artist then, so you started the YouTube channel early on and it was just like reviewing the kit you were using just like for your own entertainment, or were you trying to grow an audience? Like, how did it, like?
I never set out on YouTube to be, you know, a YouTuber. I mean, it sounds weird saying that, but I don't know. It was more a bit of fun, a bit of like I say, I've bought this. What do people think? Has anyone used anything better? That sort of mentality. The thing with YouTube is, you know, when people first set out a YouTuber, I think a lot of people fall at the first hurdle, and because they make the mistake of wanting to be a YouTuber,
right,
rather than, and I think there's a distinctive difference between doing something that you're passionate about and, you know, like, your subscribers are basically a product of your passion, I think, with YouTube. So if you're passionate about something and you're putting it on there, regardless if it gets views, regardless if you get subscribers, you're not really going to fail because you're doing something which you love. So you've succeeded. And then I find with the most successful channels, they're channels where they're fully invested. They've got the heart and soul in that channel, and they fully believe in what they're doing. And like I say, a byproduct of that passion is that they seem to get a lot of subscribers, and they seem to, you know, success sort of follows suit from that. Whereas when people do it the other way around, and they, you know, they go, right, well, I'll just put this video on because whatever, I want to be a YouTuber, the passion will subside really quickly because they're not invested in it. And it is a lot of work, and it is, you know, it's a lot of time behind the scenes editing and all that sort of stuff. So it's not just what you see when you click on that video is just a polished result, but that video could have been like a solid month of work. And if you're not passionate about doing that, you're not going to carry on with that.
I've got loads of questions off the back of that. so like first one, where did you kind of go from just kind of reviewing gadgets to doing tutorials? Because you say you do both. So like, when did it become like, I'm going to reveal this? It's kind of like you were saying, like that revealing the magician's secrets thing. You're saying of a tattoo artist getting annoyed when you're doing it. So like, when did you start doing the like practical demonstration side stuff as well?
So that came when I thought I was a standard where I was good enough to give my 50 pence, if you like. And yeah. I think it came from then. I would have never have put something on there if it was half-assed, and I thought, you know, oh, that's terrible, but I put it out anyway. It came from, and also, like the product reviewing, it was kind of a thing where if I'd learned a new technique, I'd want to share it and say, you know, and say like, well, this is how I do this. Because the thing with tattooing, there's not one set rule. It's not one add one make two. There's hundreds of different ways to get different methods to get the same outcome, and different people do it different ways and this and that. So I started just saying, well, this is what I do. This is how I get this, or, you know, like a shade or whatever. And it seemed to resonate with people a lot. And I kind of, my style of teaching, if you want to put it like that, I teach the way that I'd want to be taught, and that's answering the questions that no one seemed to ask. Especially, like I say, when the guy that taught me, he was very traditional tattooist, so very old school, very kind of like pick a design off the wall. So a lot of the methods that I developed with like realism and portraits and stuff, I developed them through myself, through trial and error. And which is going back to the thing where, you know, you say you get quite a bit of abuse from other tattooists, and they say, why are you teaching people? Why are you giving secrets away? And I just think, so I said, well, they're my secrets to give, you know, nobody yeah. gave them. So, you know, if that's on me, if I want to do that, then that's on me. Not to say that I get loads of abuse and stuff like that. I know, but I've been banging on about that. I mean, it's a very, very small percentage, but yeah, that's what I'd say to that anyway. You know, the people that do say, why are you teaching? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Is, well, that's for me. They're my techniques, and I can choose to do what I want with those techniques.
So in terms of like YouTube subscribers and you know, social media followers and that kind of stuff, like, how long had you been putting stuff out there before you started to think, oh, wow, this is actually getting quite big now? Like,
yeah, so I started my channel, I actually opened my, I think it was 2008 or something like that. This is way before I was tattooing. That's just, you know, when you look how old your channel is. When I actually first started uploading serious videos, I think it was 2015, 16, something like that. And I remember thinking at the time, if I get 100 views on this video, I'll be over the moon. And I think it's an important point to make as well with in terms of views and subscribers and all this sort of stuff surrounding YouTube, is to not base your channel and your success on anyone else's, because my channel is literally a drop in the YouTube ocean. You know, it's a tiny little drop. And if you look at these channels that have got hundreds of millions of subscribers, then you're just going to feel deflated. So in the beginning, I just set myself a personal goal. And I remember when I got 100 views on this video, I was like, wow, this is ace. And then, you know, I got a few subscribers. And when I hit 100 subscribers, I couldn't believe it. It was like, wow, but this is amazing. And I know it's, like I say, it's a tiny, tiny drop, but for me, it was massive. But yeah, I think the bottom line with that is to not compare yourself to other channels and just do what you do.
So you're saying you were starting your channel just with whatever you were uploading to YouTube before you were like turning it into this specific thing that you focus on? Are you all like, I don't know how you describe it, are you all like just like fun videos still on there? Like, if you dig into your channel, can you find like the very first stuff you uploaded that's got nothing to do with this?
there's one video, I think it's the first video I ever uploaded, and it's just my son on a Leica bike, which is basically a balance bike, like bike with no pedals, going around a BMX track. That's still on there.
Does that now have loads of views because of all your subscribers for your later videos?
It does get a few views, yeah. Someone actually commented on it not that long ago, and I'm like, oh yeah, that. but to be honest, I try not to, I mean, that video is fine because, you know, it's my son. But a lot of my first ever uploads, I don't watch them. I just point blank don't watch them because they're so terrible. I can't watch them. But I've left them on there just because, you know, they were the OGs, if you like. But I can't watch them because I'm just, you know, spluttering through them, and the lighting's really bad, the sound's really bad, the video's terrible. But they were the roots of my channel, if you like. So I do keep them on there.
That's the next thing I want to ask about as well. So like, you're in terms of production quality, obviously you're getting better all the time and like investing in that and working out. So like, what's your kind of, how's your knowledge of video making gone as you started, or like the production value, like how's that developed over time?
Yeah, massively. I'd say over the last 12 months, if you compare my recent videos to my first ever videos, just, it's like a completely different channel. The visual sides of it, you know, it's, and I think it just comes down to learning new techniques. So it's what it all comes down to. It's down to that knowledge thing. So I use Premiere Pro to edit my videos. But it's not just a case of dragging and dropping and chopping clips up and, you know, exporting them. There's techniques you learn, like color grading and you know, white balance on your camera. Obviously I upgraded my camera as well. I upgraded the audio, even the audio EQ in that, all these things, lighting, and I've had to learn techniques. A lot of the techniques I've learned with lighting and audio and things like that, ironically, I've learned from YouTube. You know, so it's
I had
just
a feeling you were going to say that.
yeah, because I mean, YouTube, I read a thing not that long ago, and YouTube basically has turned into the biggest online learning platform, where it used to be a lot of, you know, quirky jokes and this and that, which are all still on there, but the driving force behind it now is tutorials. And, you know, if you want to look for something, the first place I go to is YouTube.
Yeah. No, I can't argue with that. I fixed my oven off the back of a YouTube video.
There you go.
So, like, your channel has got bigger and bigger. I mean, at what point is it, you know, people asking you to review stuff? Like, do you get sent stuff to review? Like,
yeah. So, with in terms of things like that, I started getting messages probably when I hit it was about 30,000 subscribers I hit. And what it was, I used to get these messages from companies I'm going to go back to tattooing for a little bit here. But okay. Basically, with tattoo equipment, you get a lot of knockoffs, a lot of clones that are made in China. Now, I'm not saying for one second everything from China is no good, but a lot of tattoo machines from China are terrible. And I used to start getting messages from Chinese manufacturers saying, if you can go on our website, choose anything you like, and we'll send you it for free and you can review it for us. And every single one of these that messaged me, I turned down. And it was purely because I wanted to stay true to everything that I've always said. And I think I'd just come across as a massive sellout if I was to accept all these offers. And then say, I know I said before, don't use this, but these have sent me it for free, so use this. Do you know what I mean? You just come across as a sellout and it cheapened the channel.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what would happen. Obviously, that's not what they want to do, but like, what do you think would be the consequences if they sent you some stuff and you review it and you're like, yeah, it's rubbish, don't buy it?
Well, this is the thing. I actually had one manufacturer once, I'm not naming who they were, but I did have one manufacturer once actually said on the message, we'll send you this for a good review.
Right.
And I was just like, no. So I held out. And to be honest, it was tempting to not go with these offers, but I did hold out. And then eventually I got a message. It was through my Instagram. And it was from Barber DTS, which Barber DTS are the UK's biggest tattoo supplier. And I was like, Jesus, like, you know what? Why are these guys messaging me, you know?
At this point, how many subscribers were you on? Or whatever it is on Instagram. This is followers, right?
Yeah, around about 30,000 at that time. Channel's on 43,000 now. So it wasn't that long ago.
So how's the Instagram following? Because I've not really looked at your Instagram, so I don't know.
Instagram doesn't reflect my YouTube whatsoever. Right, okay. I think I've got about 500 followers or something like that on Instagram. But again, learning new techniques and new things like that, I've only just recently, I'd say in the last maybe 6 or 7 uploads, started actually telling people to follow me on Instagram. and that's had a direct impact because I did have about 200 followers on Instagram, and then right. That's sort of boosted to 500. So yeah, that's probably my own fault. But I didn't get into Instagram till later on. I was probably on about 25,000 subscribers on YouTube before I even got an Instagram account. I didn't really understand it, to be honest. And I was that focused with YouTube. I wasn't interested in it. But I find Instagram is a really strong tool for building YouTube now, for driving traffic to your YouTube channel.
Be interested to hear a bit more about that, because I struggle with Instagram too, because it's like, okay, it's sharing photos, but I don't especially want to do that. So like, how can you use Instagram like with your YouTube, you were saying, like, to kind of build the two things up together? How does that work?
Yeah, so I mean, like I say, all I use Instagram for is to drive traffic to YouTube. I mean, I get messages and stuff, and I answer them to people got a question, things like that. But basically, the way it works for me anyway is when I upload to YouTube, I use the same thumbnail, which I've uploaded to YouTube, and I upload it to my Instagram. And then I'll put an extra thumbnail attached to that saying, you know, watch on YouTube. Obviously, you can't have a clickable link on Instagram. So with every post that I upload, I just say, to watch this video, follow the link in the title. Link in my profile, yeah. And the link in my profile links them to my YouTube. But it does make a massive difference, you know, because you don't need a lot of followers on Instagram. You don't need any followers, really, because when you hashtag something, you know, it goes to that hashtag room, as you know. So you know, you could have zero followers, but reach a million people with one picture. Not to say a million people will follow you back, but they're still seeing it.
Yeah. Good point. So now that you've got your following, or you're building your following, it's getting bigger all the time. Like, do you have to think about like how you're coming across to kind of have brand consistency?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's two types of YouTubers. There's the ones that upload every single day without fail, and there's the ones that are like me, and it's when the video is done, that's when it's uploaded. I'd love to upload once a week, but it's just not possible. It was possible during lockdown because I had a lot more time on my hands, because obviously I wasn't working in the day tattooing. But when we've come out of lockdown again, it's just finding that time, because a lot of my videos, they involve animation and things like this. And it takes a lot of time to create these videos. So if I aim maybe once every 2 weeks, I'm happy. The last one, it took 3 weeks to go on. But I'm all about quality over quantity every time. And I've seen this. I've watched channels which... There was one particular channel. It wasn't anything to do with tattooing. It was like a tech channel. And he had 2,000 more subscribers than me. And I subscribed to him because, he teaches you how to like build computers and stuff like that. And I needed like an editing beast for my YouTube channel. So I subscribed to him. And then every single day, it's ping, 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 upload, upload, upload. And I found... The quality and the content was really, really starting to get dilute with his channel. And when I look at his subscribers now, I've actually got 3,000 more subscribers than him when he had 2,000 more than me at the beginning when I first subscribed to him. And that's with me uploading once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks, and him uploading every single day. So I think it's a trap that people can fall into. I get it. I get why they're doing it, because they want to grow, and they want to grow quick. But I think if you put the quality every time, I like my subscribers to think every single time they get a notification on their phone or whatever from me, that they go, right, I'm going to watch this because I know it's going to be good. I know it's going to be quality. Where I think it can be damaging more than anything if you just upload every single day and there's no content behind it, because people in the end, they'll start going, I'm not going to even bother seeing what this is because it's probably just going to be garbage. That's my theory anyway.
No, I think I can relate to what you're saying. And just like as a viewer on YouTube, like I've noticed some of the channels that do upload every day or like really regularly, a lot of the times they'll have like two or three videos that basically say the same thing. It's just like, yeah, they just feel like they have to upload. They've already got a perfectly good video for that thing, but they're just uploading another one because they've got to upload.
Like, that's right. And I think ultimately it can be quite damaging, not just for your audience. I know I keep mentioning subscribers, but the analytics behind it as well. Because obviously, the more my channel built up, I'd start getting into the analytics side of things. And then, you'll start getting, it's called your click-through rate, and you'll get a channel average, and that'll start to decrease. And when that starts to decrease, it can be quite damaging for your channel, for YouTube actually promoting your channel. So, I don't know. For me personally, anyway, that's the way I've done it. And by no means, some YouTube superstar or anything like that. I think my channel, it's okay. It's not massive. It's not tiny. It is what it is. But I'm not claiming to be an expert. I can only tell you what I do and what I've done.
Can we talk about like the monetization of YouTube a bit? Because I know they keep moving the goalposts so that it's like, okay, now this section make money. Now this section make money off ads and stuff like that. And I feel like it's kind of because there are that many popular channels, they're kind of like, okay, well, now you need X subscribers. So like what's
100%,
how's that gone? Like, what's your relationship? Like, when did it first start making money, and how's the journey been on that, purely from YouTube? Obviously, there's other money coming from, getting products and more customers and what have you.
Yeah. With the revenue side of things, when I first started, you needed, I think it was 1,000 views. Don't quote me on this, but I think it was you needed 1,000 views, like lifetime views on your channel, and it was something like 100 subscribers or something like that.
Yeah.
And I know it was about a year ago, they changed the goalposts. And now you need, I think it's 1,000 subscribers minimum. And it's something like 100,000, not views, hours, sorry, so like 100,000 yeah. hours, like, or something like that. Maybe not 100,000. That sounds too high, actually. But they definitely did change the goalposts, and they made it just a little bit harder to reach. And it's almost like a traffic light system. If you go into your, if you download like a YouTube Studio, and you can go into the analytics side of it, like the behind the scenes of it, if you like. And there's literally grayed out buttons and then green buttons that light up when you hit certain goalposts. And when you're ready to start making revenue through AdSense, that's when that becomes green, and then you can actually start monetizing your videos.
So it sort of permits you to monetize the videos once you've got a certain popularity, I suppose, is the way of putting it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah.
And what about the actual amounts you get as well? Haven't they also lowered that? Like, so it's like you can advertise, but then as a percentage of whatever you put on there from the ad.
The way the ad, it's really, really strange and complex how the revenue works. So basically, you get what's called a CPM. And that's click per thousand, money per thousand views, basically.
Yeah.
So you get paid for every 1,000 views you get in a video, you'll get your CPM. Now your CPM is different for every channel. If you're quite a niche channel, it tends to be a bit higher. If you're just, you know, a really common channel, it'll be quite low. And that's just the way it works. And the CPM fluctuates, and it's not just a set number as well. It fluctuates for every country. So on your channel breakdown, it'll say you've had, I don't know, 40% American subscribers, and the CPM in America is X amount. And your UK subscribers, you've had 10% views, your CPM for UK is X amount. And it's basically like that. And it all gets added up. At the end of the month, you get a statement and it'll say you've made X amount. That's how it works.
And do you get to choose what sponsors and adverts go on there, or is that YouTube's decision?
That's all YouTube. Unless you are approached by a company that want to actually buy advertising space on your channel. But that's a whole different beast in itself, because there's a lot of scams going about. I get them all the time, emails saying, they usually claim the gaming channels or something like this.
Yeah.
And they'll say, name your price for 30 seconds at the beginning of this video. And they offer you all this stuff. And what it comes down to is basically they want you to download this file where the script is, you know.
Right.
And it's no better than the phone hackers, the call centers, the fake call centers. So there's a lot of that that goes on. But I think, you know, you get wise to it after a while. But as regards to the skippable adverts at the beginning of a video, they're all they're all from YouTube. But it with those as well, it's not. So say I've got a video on my channel and you watch it, and then your friend watches it. You might get a completely different advert to what your friend,
because it's tailored to me, because it's based on my Google account,
yeah.
Right?
And that's why you can't choose them, because it's just viewer experience.
Yeah. And what about, I don't know what the official word for it is, where you have like sponsored links where like you review a thing and then you could, kind of the company clicks that link on your video and you take a percentage? Like, have you got involved in those things?
I can't remember what the company was. Yeah, there was a company, it was wireless headphones, actually. And I used it purely because it was for when you do conventions and things like that. And that's how they marketed these headphones. And they sent me some. You can get companies say, if you can have this tailored link, and if anyone buys through this link, then you can have whatever percentage. It doesn't happen often, that, to be honest, but it does happen.
So now that you've got like the experience of making YouTube channels for your, well, I guess for your business and just like what you're related to. Have you thought more about like video making creatively? Like, do you want to like get into like making films and videos and things, like, I don't know, like stories and what have you?
Yeah, I've always had a deep interest with movie making and all sorts of things like this. I mean, I remember when, way back when, I think I was about 12 or 11 or something like that, and I got an Amiga 1200, if you remember.
I do remember the Amiga 1200.
Yeah, back in the Commodore 64 days.
I had one of them as well.
Yeah. And I had this program called Deluxe Paint. I think it was Deluxe Paint 5 or something like that. And you could animate with it. And it was a really, really basic animation thing. And I suppose my introduction to keyframes, because that's what it was on an intrinsic level. It was just basic keyframing. And I made this this animation called Baby's Dinner. And it was basically like a really innocent version of Sausage Party. and it was basically all these bits of food on the table. There was an egg and carrots, and the carrots got chopped. They were all talking to each other. And then the chef came along, the carrots got chopped up, the peas got boiled alive. And then they all got ate by this baby. And it took me about 6 months to make, because back with the Amiga, with that software, as basic as it was, what you'd have to do was draw every single picture. So you'd make a keyframe, you'd draw a whole scene, background and everything, and then you'd click next, and then you'd have a blank screen, and then you'd have to draw the whole thing again. So this video, I think it was about a minute long, so it took me about 6 months just sat in my room. And then at the end of the video, there was just this baby and he just spewed up everything. And I think the moral of the story was they all died for nothing, which were quite dark for a 12-year-old, but it just came from there.
So like Amiga 1200, so like for you to save that video, you would have had to like plug the Amiga into a VHS or something like that, right? If you wanted to export that in some sort of way.
It was saved on, if I remember, I'm sure it was saved on a floppy disk, because you could put blank disks in it and then write to them. I'm sure that's how I did it. I remember not having any sort of export third party thing or anything like that.
This reminds me a lot of when I had a Super Nintendo with Mario Paint, and like the same thing. It was like, and then you click next frame, and then you press You press animate, and it puts it all together, and it's like 30 seconds maximum because it's a SNES cartridge, and it's got
And it's took like RAM. 6 months of your life to do it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
but that before I had a computer, when I was first trying to make like a short film, or whatever, that's how I did the titles. I just like did it all on there, and then I plugged the SNES into a VCR and like recorded it. Yeah, it looks awful, but it's all I had. Like,
excellent. I like that. Yeah, things have moved on since then. Let's say with modern day, with Premiere Pro, obviously you got like keyframing and, you know, all sorts of like bells and whistles. But I think it all comes back to that. You know, it all comes back to it's like I say, on an intrinsic level, it's basically that. It's just keyframing and stuff like works out the gaps in between the keyframes. But it's all basically that. And I've always had a fascination with making little animations and things like that, especially as a kid. And when we got teenagers, I remember getting a camcorder for Christmas. And me and my mates used to go make stupid videos, you know, like early Jackass videos, just messing about just as kids. And then we used to edit it with Windows Movie Maker. For it, I hate that program. But
I've had hours on Windows Movie Maker in the day. I don't think it exists anymore.
No, I hope not. So yeah, that's I've always had an interest in things like that. Obviously, when I picked up Premiere Pro, I had to relearn everything. But I think once you get a base knowledge of how timelines work and keyframes, and you know, it's not that much of a transition than not knowing anything at all and then just sitting there with this program with all these things staring at you. So yeah.
So if you were going to make something like a narrative short, would you want to do an animation still?
To be honest, I don't think my animation skills are up to scratch for any sort of mini film, if you like. But I'd love to make, you know, just I don't know, just like an atmospheric, but because I like messing about with sound effects and backing tracks. I recently signed up to Artlist, the royalty free music and sound effects and things like that. And there's so much stuff in there. And it's one of those things where you didn't even want to make a movie or anything like that. And then you hear the, like this one sound effect and you're like, oh, I want to base some around this whole sound effect, you know, but just like a, maybe a door creaking open or a bass drop or something like that. And you're like, right, I want to make something now just based around this one thing that I've heard. But yeah, I love all stuff like that.
That's interesting as well, because like your videos, you know, you'll do like a review or something, but it'll almost be like a movie trailer. So I can tell that you have like this like big idea for like soundscapes and like making everything grand and like the angles and things that you use in your videos to like yeah. give an impact. So I can tell that you've got this like cinematic persuasion in there. So like, I
yeah.
mean, so you said about music and sound, did that come about out of necessity? Because obviously, you know, there's only most things you can't use without either losing the right to monetize or having to pay someone for. So was it just like, I need to find some music or I need to find some sounds, and then it just accidentally yeah, discovered more?
I mean, I signed up to Artlist purely because, I mean, I'm not plugging them, but by any, you know, there's tons of them out
getting
there.
20% if anyone signs up.
2 months free, actually, but no. No, the thing with anything like that, you can't do anything nowadays on the internet without someone wanting a slice, you know. And back in the day, I was probably guilty of just finding some music and just ripping it from YouTube on an MP on a YouTube ripper. Everyone's done it. Yeah. But the thing now is, when you upload to YouTube, they've got this new feature. And to be honest, I think it's a really good feature because it actually checks your video before you've even got the option to publish it for any copyright strikes. And basically what that does is it says, you know, you might have known, you might not have known, but this is copyright material. And they'll point out which part of the video it is. And then that gives you the option then to publish it anyway and dispute it, or go, right, okay, I need to remove this and change it before you actually publish it. Because I've done videos in the past where I've uploaded something and then I've got a notice after it's been published. And then you're in the problem of, do you... Because when you get a copyright strike, it's not just a case of like, they're going to remove your video. You can agree that it does contain copyright. And then you can actually do a thing where the money that you generate from that video actually goes to the person who owns that copyright thing.
That's so, the situation I'm aware of. Because sometimes I'll put things in there just for fun. And it's like, okay, that's fine. It's worth it because I just want
to. Yeah. Which is exactly what happened on my that first ever video of my son. I didn't know anything about YouTube or anything, you know, and I just found it. I think it was a Blink-182 track. And I just put it on as a backing track behind it. And then straight away, I got this copyright strike. And they're like, so-and-so music. Incorporated own this, do you dispute it or not? And I'm like, no, it's theirs. So they get the monetized for that. And I was just fed up of, you know, and especially with this new feature, but it's a good feature. It's a really good feature because it lets you know before you publish it. So you can't then, you know, if you've got a video that's doing really, really well, then be in the situation where, do I delete it? And then have to re-upload it, and then your view count starts from zero again. You can sort all that out before you even published it. I did get a copyright strike recently on a video. It was a time-lapse video, and it was a really cool, like atmospheric song, like a instrumental behind the track, and that was from Artlist. And I got a copyright strike against it from YouTube, and I was furious at the time because I thought, no, like I paid Artlist for this, and all their stuff's supposed to be cleared for YouTube. So I had to go through I disputed it, and I had to go through all the motions and sending them a license number and rah, rah, rah. And eventually I won because obviously I contacted Artlist and I said, look, this is the deal. This is what's been said. And they were like, don't worry about it. It's everything's clear. And that's why I use a company like that. And for the price of them as well, I mean, for the amount of videos that I upload, it's just not worth. And the production value that you can gain in your videos for using a company like that, it's priceless for me anyway, for my channel anyway.
Do you find it most useful for music or effects or both?
For me personally, music, but Obviously, I suppose it depends what channel it is. I suppose if you had an animation channel or something like that, then effects, they're probably at the forefront of it. But for me personally, I use like probably 95% for music. And it's just nice to have that clear, royalty-free, you're not going to get any strikes or anything like that, and you know your video's good.
I think the question I have about those royalty-free things, and maybe you know the answer, is so if you, because they're time subscriptions. So, like, if I have a subscription for a year and I use a bunch of music, when I stop my subscription, do I then have to pull my videos because I no longer have the license? Or do I, so I have to pay for the rest of my life to be able to keep those videos up?
That's a question that gets asked a lot. And like I say, I'm not endorsed by Artlist at all. So I'm not plugging. The only reason I go with them is because they're such a good company, and that's a really, really good question. And it's a question a lot of people ask. And the answer is, with a company like Artlist, they have one license and it covers everything. So a lot of companies, they'll say, well, you can't use it for YouTube, or you can use it for YouTube, but it can't be this type of video. And it's like a minefield of what you can and can't use. And with them, it's literally, and that's how they plug it, that's how they advertise it. It's one license for you. So if you want to use that for a feature film that'll go in the cinema, you're covered for it. If you want to use it for YouTube, you're covered for it. If you want to monetize it and make money from a video which has got that track on it, you're covered. And the really cool thing about them is, if you downloaded that, so say you had a yearly subscription and you downloaded a track and that video uploaded, say like halfway through that year, and then at the end of that year, subscription ends, your license will still be covered for the rest of your life for that video, even though you haven't got a subscription to them, which is in stark contrast of what Adobe does.
I know.
Adobe have got their own thing, and I've heard a lot of bad stuff
I
about
think
them. But yeah,
YouTube even
basically,
have their own thing. There's like an internal thing where you can sign up to some YouTube.
that's right. And that's why I use them, because the most upfront, the most simple to use. But I just think it sucks that how a business can lure you in, like say some of these other ones, and like you say, you'll pay for this license, but maybe I don't want to sign up to that for the next 50 years or whatever. You might find somewhere cheaper or whatever, and then as soon as you cancel that, you can guarantee your video will start getting copyright strikes on it, and then you're gonna have to start paying all your monetized to that company, which obviously doesn't happen with the one I use.
So, do you enjoy working with video and edited videos? Because that's obviously come about as sort of a side product.
Yeah, I love the final the final result of editing. I do like editing. I mean, when I make animation, it takes forever, but it's so worth it when it's done. You can sit back and you're like, right, that's done. And I think if I did rush a video and I just did the bare minimum, I'd probably be disappointed in myself at the end of it. So although it does take a lot of time and this and other, I do enjoy editing. I think you have to. I mean, you'll know yourself. It takes, I mean, you've edited films and things like that, haven't you? So you know just how long stuff takes. And for me, just even, I don't know, a 30-second, maybe 1 minute intro, they're like over an hour just like editing it, getting it right, like color grading it, EQing it, this. And I like the edits to flow seamlessly if I can. It's not always possible, but if there's I try my best to not have like cuts or what should I say, what noticeable cuts in a scene, where you're dancing around like a stop motion video because there's that many cuts in it. So I try to, if I can, get one take. And if I can't get one take, then I try to seam in some B-roll so you can't see me dancing around the screen, because I'm no good at, which is why I don't do live videos, because I'm no good at doing live. I'll just splutter my way through it, and I have to retake. And I could do it in one take if I wanted to, but it'd look horrendous. So
You're talking about B-roll for the kind of videos you do. Is that like inserts and things of like the product you're talking about,
So
or?
I film my own B-roll, and it can just be like, just if it's a product that I'm reviewing or anything like that, it can just be a slow motion take or a tracking shot or something like that on the video. And I think it just gives your videos a bit of a prof more of a professional shine to them, especially going back to like the sponsorships and things like that. because at the end of the day, I do want to impress the sponsors, and I do want them to think, like, you know, we need to use this guy, because there's plenty of competition out there. You know, they don't need to come to me. These companies that they can go to anywhere. So the fact that they've come to me, some of them, then I don't know. I think if I did a half-assed job of it, I think it's kind of like a bit of a middle finger to them, saying, like, well, you know, thanks for the product anyway, but is your crappy review on it. And I, like you said before, like, some of the intros are a bit cinematic and things like that, and maybe they are a bit OTT, you know, but I don't know. I think it just gives them an edge, and whether you laugh at them or you love them, the point is people talk about them. And I think, you know, it goes back to that thing where no publicity is bad publicity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's just, I think you do a good job of coming across as though it's like a production made by a company with lots of people involved, whereas it is just kind of you setting everything up for yourself and, like, making sure that it's done professionally. Because at the other end, there's probably people making similar videos or, like, similar themed videos that's just, like, some bloke filming himself on a phone and then uploading it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that does happen as well. And again, that's, maybe that's down to me. I like to micromanage, especially my videos, which is what I know a lot of YouTubers, especially when they start getting big, they get editors, and it sounds great on the face of it, because you just take this raw cut, and then you give it to your editor, and then you get back a polished product at the end of it. Obviously, they cost the earth and things like that, but people do it. But it's something I could never do, because I'm so conscious of what I want and what I don't want in the video. I could never give the reins to someone else and say, you know, here's the raw video. Do what you want with it. You cut it together. I just couldn't, because I micromanage everything. And before a video goes uploaded and I get the final cut of it, I probably watched it through maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 times. Just to make, and every time, even if I could guarantee you, I could look through any of my YouTube videos now and I'd find faults all the way through, and I'd be like, I changed that. So to give those reins to someone else, I couldn't do it.
I'm nodding along with everything you're saying. It's like what you were saying about editing, because I don't know if you get this, but for me, it's almost like time disappears. Like, you'll sit there and you think, I'm just going to check this one thing. And then you look at your watch, it's like 6 hours later. It's like, okay.
One, yeah, that. 100%, yeah, that happens all the time, to the point where there'll be some nights and I think, right, okay, I'm going to film this intro, this is going to take me, like, I don't know, maybe an hour or something like that, and I'm just going to get this done, and then I'll check the clock and maybe it's like, I don't know, 20 to midnight or something like that, and I think, right, I'm going to be done by 1:30, and I literally blink and it's getting light out because I've been sat there all night, literally all night. And that's another thing, people, I've done like a Q&A session before my YouTube, and people say, how do you find time? Because obviously, like, you know, you've got family, and then you've got a business to run, like tattooing. How do you find time to do YouTube as well? And it's a simple answer for me anyway, is, as I say, I don't sleep, because that's how a lot of the videos do come about. Because if I just went to bed at a normal time, I probably wouldn't have half the videos on there. So literally a lot of them, though, it's not been uncommon for me to, you know, wife and kids go to bed and then they get up in the morning and I'm still sat at the computer and they're like, have you not been to bed yet? I'm like, no. And I've just literally worked through the night just editing. But I think, you know, you've got to do what you've got to do. But that comes back down to that passionate thing, doesn't it? Because if you wasn't passionate about it, you wouldn't be sat there all night doing that.
So, like, now that you've got, I guess, a fairly consistent income from YouTube as well as obviously working, like, have you thought about tattooing less and, like, changing the balance a bit, like spending less time actually in the studio to allow time for the YouTube?
It's definitely crossed my mind. I don't think I'm at a stage where I can cut down tattooing yet, but I do love doing YouTube and it is a passion of mine, but so is tattooing, don't get me wrong. And I think if I was to weigh them up, I love them both equally. But it is something I've considered, And maybe I'm looking into at the moment, I'm actually developing at the moment an online course, which is just another thing to keep me up at night. another thing that I've, I don't know, looking into, if you like. So, and that's basically my YouTube video is just more concentrated with an online course.
It's one of those things like, what's it called? Like Udemy or one of those type things.
Exactly, right? Like that. Yeah. And uploading content to something like that. And it never dilute my YouTube or anything like that. You know, the videos are on there. But the thing with YouTube is, personally, what I think is people's attention spans quite small. And if you see a video on YouTube and it's, I don't know, 50 minutes long, and then there's another video which is 10 minutes long, which is basically the same content, 9 times out of 10, maybe 10 times out of 10, you're going to click on the 10-minute one first, because people just don't seem to have the time to, or the attention span, or what it is. It's just society as a whole. People don't seem to have that attention span now to, unless they really, really want to get involved with that subject, then they're not clicking on that video, which is where the online training sort of idea is born from. Because, you know, my YouTube videos, probably the longest ones on average are probably maybe 15, 20 minutes long. Try to keep them around 10 minutes long if I can. And an online training course, you're probably looking at about 6 hours, which is just not gonna work for YouTube. And it also kind of concentrates the audience then. So the ones that do go to that online training course are the ones that are really, really want to be there, and not just someone casually browsing YouTube.
Yeah, and presumably they'll have paid to be there as well, which is another reason why they'll stick with it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I think the YouTube thing has kind of changed over time, because it used to be, I mean, I'm going back some time now, like it used to be that, like, if you're on YouTube, you'd be sitting on your computer watching stuff, whereas now it's like a link on your phone that someone sent you. You know, you're like, start, yeah, I'll watch this thing, and then you'll just be like looking at your phone, and it's like, oh, okay, I'll go do another thing now.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you, I check my YouTube. I've got the YouTube app, but I have the YouTube Studio app as well. And I spend more time on that than any other app on my phone. That's Facebook, Instagram, because I don't know, it kind of turns into a bit of an obsession, if you like, just viewing the analytics, because there's a lot to be said about if you get into the analytics of stuff. I don't want to go too deep into it, but
I want to hear it if you do want to go deep into it.
Oh, yeah, you can, yeah. Do. Yeah, you, yeah, can do. I'll talk all day for you. But yeah, if you delve into the analytics of YouTube, that's where you can really make your channel work. You know, providing you've got the foundations in place, and the foundations being you're passionate about it, you've got good content. But that is not always enough, especially if you're just starting out with YouTube. And it can be disheartening that people expect to upload a video and get thousands and thousands of subscribers, thousands of views, hundreds of thousands of views in a week or whatever. And it doesn't work like that. And the reason it doesn't work like that is because YouTube doesn't let it work like that. And there's an algorithm which YouTube use, and it's, in essence, it's a really shrewd business algorithm, and where it kind of rewards the strong, and I wouldn't say punishes the weak, but I think punishes a bit too harsh. But that's exactly how YouTube works. It's only interested in the strong, and that's how the algorithm works. And I've seen this through the analytics. So basically, if you've got, I'm going to get a bit technical here with you.
No, go for it.
If you've got a click through rate, so your click through rate is basically, when you upload a video, YouTube will go, okay, we'll give this guy a shot. That's basically how it works. So they'll give you what's called impressions or reach. And what they are is basically when you watch a video, you see the suggested videos at the side. So every time your video appears at the side as a suggested video, that is one impression. So if YouTube put out 100 impressions, so you've uploaded a video, and then YouTube go, okay, so this is this kind of category, let's say tattooing. So when you watch someone else's video, YouTube will say, okay, so we're going to put this guy's video on the sidebar to suggest it. Now, every single time that that gets put on the sidebar, that's classed as an impression. If someone clicks on that, you'll get what's called click-through rate. If your click-through rate is below 2%, which is pretty low, that's, well, if it's on 2%, should I say, that's classed as an average click-through rate for YouTube. So YouTube are good with that. Anything higher than that, 4 to 5% is classed as a really, really good click-through rate. So if your click-through rate is trending at around about 4 to 5%, YouTube will give you more impressions. They'll reward you with more impressions. So where they recommended you 100 times, they go, okay, this guy's getting, out of these 100 people, 5% of the people are clicking on it. We'll give them 1,000 impressions now. We'll see how that does. When that, you know, if your click-through rate still maintains at around about that 4 to 5%, they give you 100,000, they give you 1,000,000, and it just keeps going like that. So it sort of builds on itself. It's a snowball effect. But on the flip side of that coin is, if no one clicks on it and your click-through rate is like 0 or 0.1, YouTube will drop you like a stone, and they won't give you any impression for that particular video, not all of you.
So this is for the clicks on that video. So you say they'll give you like 100 or so, just as like a chance.
I don't know what the figures are, but yeah. They will give you some impressions, yeah. And obviously, the more views you get, the more likes you get. Everything that you get on it, a comment, a like, which is funny on my videos, because I know there's some people, I don't know if they're rival channels or whatever, but I always get an obligatory thumbs down as soon as I upload a video. You know.
Sorry, that's me trying to get your attention.
But the funny thing is with that is it's classed as an interaction. So whether it's a thumbs down, whether it's someone telling you that you suck or anything like that, it's an interaction. So ultimately, they're helping you build your channel. They're putting your click-through rate up.
Like the impressions thing I hadn't thought about. Like I'd thought about things like hashtags and search terms and that kind of thing. But the impressions thing, so like what I've got from that is it's really, really important what you have as the little thumbnail image. Because like, yes. I feel like that's the thing that people are going to go, oh. And before they even read the title.
Well, going back to that attention thing, it starts with that thumbnail. And the thumbnail thing, I'm sure that's one of those, you know, going back to that thing where you unlock different privileges, if you like, on your channel. Even a channel that's just started out, you don't even get that option to do a custom thumbnail. You have to earn that. No. Well, it didn't used to be. I don't know if it's changed, but I'm pretty sure it's still like that. So YouTube just pick one for you from that video, which in essence, again, is that thing where it's like not helping the weak, because, you know, if you're just starting a channel out and you're like, right, I want to do everything I can to make people click on my video. And it's like, I can't even give a catchy thumbnail. What chance have I got? But it's just the way YouTube, it's bizarre. I get it from a business point of view, because they're a ruthless business machine for making money, and they don't want to focus on channels that are weak for them. They want to focus on people that's going to generate money for them, and that's how they work. That's the beast. What is YouTube? But yeah, working on that click through rate, it's interesting what you just said about the thumbnail, because I base all my videos on like this click-through rate and performance things with all these analytics. And I've actually had videos before where I've looked at a thumbnail when a video's not been doing so well. I've looked at my analytics, and the click-through rate's been maybe 3% on this particular video. And I've gone, I wonder if I change this out. So I'll change the thumbnail, because you can change the thumbnail whenever you like on a video. Yeah. And then a few weeks later, the click-through rate's gone up, and just through making those changes, and you can see the direct impact on your analytics. And for me, it's all about tweaking those things, saying, you know, what did my last video do, which was so successful? What did I do on that one, which I've done different on this one? And every time I upload a video, I try to outdo my last one, which is impossible, but you know, it's just something I do. And I try to, you know, make like popping thumbnails. I try like how big is the video? How long is the intro? How long is the outro? All these things are like, constantly thinking like, what can I do next? And to make it more engaging for people to, because it's not just about people clicking on it as well, views. It's about viewer retention as well, because that's the thing on your analytics as well, which plays a massive part in YouTube giving you impressions. Because if you've got, because you could just click a video a million times, you know, and just try and get those views up. But obviously YouTube's not stupid. They know all these things. So a high viewer retention is a massive thing for getting impressions as well.
Didn't they also change that though? Wasn't it, you used to just have to be subscribed to a channel. Now you've got to subscribe and have alerts switched on if you want.
If you want, yeah, that's right. If you want the notifications ping on your phone. And I think that maybe that's born from the, like you said, there's so many people with it on the phones now. It's because it used to be a thing where if you subscribe, when you open the app, if someone load a new video, it'll be there on the homepage. Yeah. But now people actually get alerts. And that's key as well, getting people to click the notification, because obviously if you've got, I don't know, say 10,000 subscribers and you've got 10,000 people that's got an alert switched on the phone, when you upload a video, you're guaranteeing 10,000 people have got that alert. If a fraction of those people just click that video, you know, you could upload a video and within seconds you've got 2,000 views on it. And that's how it works. And then if that happens, then YouTube will go, right, okay, let's give this guy some serious impressions. And then it just builds from there, which is why it's a snowball. It's a
snowball, like you were saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jinx.
Yeah.
So like, it feels to me like if you've got this much of an audience, it's like there's opportunities there. Like, have you thought about, I don't know, like merchandising, like printing t-shirts and mugs and all that kind of stuff? Like,
it's crossed my mind, but to be honest, I'm not going to do merchandise. I just think for some channels it works really well, depending on what it is. But for me personally, I think I come across as like a narcissist or something like that. If I you know, like buy this t-shirt, we're like who wants that? You know, if there was ever, I don't know, imposter syndrome, I've definitely got that. So I won't be doing any sort of merch or anything like that, because I just think it's crazy that people subscribe to my channel in the first place. And I'm not just saying that like thinking, you know, I genuinely mean that, because there's so many channels out there with such good content and things like that. And then, you know, I take a step back sometimes and I think like, why have they subscribed to my channel? I don't even know what I'm talking about. But
what do you think So what is like the niche that your channel has that like people are looking for that they might not find in other channels, or that you might do better than other channels?
From the feedback from the comment section, the overriding comment which I usually get is, I like this guy because he's down to earth, and he, you know, there's no airs and graces about it. It's to the point. It's what I've come for. He's answered my question, and I think if you can do that and you can resonate with people, because especially in my business in tattooing, there's a lot of egos in this business, big egos, and I like to call them tattoo rock stars, and there's a lot of style and no substance, I think, as well. Not all of them, but a lot of them, and it's quite a cliquey business as well, and I've never really felt part of that clique ever, to the point where, like I say, I feel like I've got imposter syndrome almost, like a bit of a fraud, because I'm not part of this clique. I'm not part of these like super cool tattooists or this and other. But what I do find is these tattoo rock stars, whatever you want to call them, they're very, they don't want to share anything. They're very, very egotistical. It's all about them, you know, and it's all style, no substance. And the fact that my channel, it's a bit of a breath of fresh air, when the sense that, you know, you haven't got this guy like doing close-ups, like contrasted black and white images, like, you know what I mean? And you know, I've seen channels before doing tattoos and you can't even see the tattoo because it's just focused on the guy's face, like and a funky black and white filter. And that's a lot of what tattoo business is. And it's all about, look at me, like, and I don't know, I just don't buy into all that. So I think just keeping it real, keeping it just down to earth, and just being like answering people's questions instead of, you know, on your title saying, I'm going to show you how to do this. And then you sit and watch 20 minutes of someone that don't show you how to do anything. other than telling you, you shouldn't be able to tattoo because you don't contain the magical tattoo gene. So don't even try. And my channel doesn't do that. My channel basically tells people, like, you know, you don't need a magical gene. You don't need to be this skilled person. You just need to put a bit of time and effort into it. And it really resonates with people. That's why I think my channel does so well.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting, like, because there is a place on YouTube for everything. Like, it's like, this isn't the kind of thing that I would immediately think, oh, I'll go on YouTube and find this, but of course it exists. And it's like, cause everything you want is on YouTube. So that's kind of where I was going from. It's like, okay, so there must be hundreds of people doing this, and yet you're standing out doing a thing. And so it's really interesting to hear you say that.
It's not really a case of being different. I think my channel is different to many channels out there. I can't say for all of them, but the vast majority of tattoo channels, should I say, because I say a lot of them are just on power trips. But my channel is different in the sense that it uses animation to and I sort of teach things, like I said before, how I'd want to be taught. So, and how I'd want to be taught is, I need to see an image and go, okay, and like really go into detail and be as super clear as possible and as in a shorter time frame as possible. And that's what my videos, that's what I try to do anyway with them all. And that resonates with people. So I think, well, maybe a lot of people do like to learn like that. That's how I like to learn. Because you do get a lot of videos, they'll say, you know, this is how you're going to learn this today. And it's just basically some guy just sat tattooing. It's like, right, you've not explained anything. Or
yeah, whereas anything. Yours is, it's not interactive, but it sort of like has different things going on to like
get your attention. Yeah.
So yeah. Talking about animations, presumably you're not still doing this on an Amiga 1200. How?
No.
how do you do them now?
I just use Premiere Pro, a mixture of Premiere Pro, Photoshop. So basically, I use Photoshop for the caricatures, if you like. Draw all them in Photoshop, import them into Premiere Pro, and then I use keyframing. And that's all I use. So if I'm using like a character animation or anything like that, I'll split the character up, I'll import it like arms, legs, head, this, that, and other, and I just set keyframes and move them about a bit. It's not hard.
So like now, with all the stuff that you've learned and all the different skills you have, if you wanted to start something brand new on YouTube, like if you made short films, like how would you go about getting an audience for that, given that it's not going to be the same audience? So like, how would you start?
I think the logical way to do it would be to advertise it on my channel, because I've already got a platform there. And granted, it's not the same. If it were short films, it wouldn't be the same audience. But
you're going to get enough people curious probably to be able to kickstart it, aren't you?
Exactly, yeah. And going back to that click-through rate thing and that, you know, all that, just getting that kickstart to and those views to push YouTube algorithm to giving you those impressions. That's how I'd go about it. And then, I mean, if I was starting and I didn't have a YouTube channel, I'd just use what I've got. I'd go on Instagram and I'd promote the hell out of it on Instagram, just hashtagging it everywhere and saying, follow this link. That's how I'd do it.
Is there anything else you want to say that we've not covered?
So there's, I'd like to hit, my target was, I always set little goals for myself. So my target was this year to hit 50,000 subscribers before Christmas. And it looks like the channel's heading, it looks like I'm going to hit that probably around about summertime now. So I'm really, really pleased about that. So yeah, that's a personal goal of mine. And I'd love to hit the 100,000 purely because there's a silver YouTube button, which I always tease my son about, because I always say to him, when I get this button, he's like, you're not going to get this button. So I'd love that to turn up through the post. He just thinks I'm a geek and embarrassment, which is fine.
Well, they physically send you a thing in the post for the silver.
Yeah, yeah. When you used to get a bronze one for, I think it was 10,000, but I think that many channels were starting to hit 10,000. They stopped, they phased it out. But yeah, when you hit 100,000, you get a it's like a plaque, and it's the YouTube logo like in silver. So that'd be really cool if I got that. That's just cool. To embarrass it.
It's good that they do that. Like, it's a bit of fun, but it's like a thing to have. I like it.
Yeah, It's almost like that mentality of, you know, games that like suck you in, you know, like, I don't know, like Candy Crush or something like that.
Trophies and all that stuff.
That's the ethos of it, I think. It's to try and level you up and want to level up, because if there were nothing at the end of it, it might be a bit like, eh. But I don't know. It'd be cool to get something like that through a post, I think.
Okay, do you want to promote your YouTube? Although it's easy to find, it is just your name, right?
it literally is, yeah. If you just type Jono Smith on YouTube, you can come and check it out and see, make fun of me, probably.
Is that the same for your Instagram, or is that a bit harder to get?
My Instagram is Jono Smith Tattoo.
Cool. It's weird. Like, I still don't Instagram. I am the last person on the planet that doesn't. But,
yeah, I was the same as it. Like I say, I got into it really, really late with Instagram. And I know there's people on there, which is kind of reverse to my YouTube, to be fair, because there's people on YouTube that have got maybe, I don't know, 1,000 subscribers. You look on their Instagram, they've got like 40,000 followers. And like, wow, mine's definitely the other way around to that. But I used to do a thing where I just used to go through, just follow. But then I find that you don't really see anyone's post because you're following that many people. The home screen's refreshing that much. So I stopped doing that after a while, and I just follow people that I really, really want to follow now.
Yeah, because if it occurs to you, you could always look the other ones up. It's not...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's been really interesting talking to you, because I don't do anywhere near as much on YouTube as I should, because I'm always thinking, okay, I've got to sell this film on Amazon, or I've got to promote this film somewhere else, or get it to festivals. And a lot of festivals are like, it's not allowed to be online before you get it in our thing. And it's kind of like,
yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
But I definitely should do more on there. And I think, like, just talking to you, I've got like a few tips on how I can do this. And between this and some of the other episodes, this is kind of my backdoor into knowing what I'm doing.
I think it's all down to that. You need to get that studio, that YouTube studio up. And just hammer those analytics, and you'll be surprised. Just make little tweaks, little changes, and watching those percentages fluctuate.
Yeah, I'll give it a go. So yeah, really good talking to you, really useful, and hope you've enjoyed yourself.
I have. I've been nervous as hell because I've never done anything like that, which is why I avoid doing any live videos or anything like that. So hopefully I've provided you some good content.
No, it's been really good. I've enjoyed it. Right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. I'll catch you in a bit.